This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast. We have a new episode every week. You can find them at thehollywoodoutsider.com, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or just whatever podcast app you use. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'll be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. And as our loyal listeners know, every once in a while, we like to bring you interviews with independent filmmakers, kind of give you an insight into what goes into getting their films made, as well as insight into the respected film itself. This time, we're talking about a movie called Sundown. It follows Logan and Blake, two high school seniors, who inadvertently get blessed with a week in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, to have the time of their lives. And of course, Logan learns a few life lessons because he's a wannabe DJ. There's a potential for his burgeoning career. He's also been entrusted with a family heirloom that ends up going missing. And he runs across the lady that just might be the love of his life in Gabby, who's played by Camilla Bell. It's a really surprisingly fun movie. A lot of times you go to watch these sex comedies and they're very often the same, which means they can be a little repetitive. And we do talk about this in the interview you're about to hear. But this one was fun. It was nice and light and fun, and it had a few surprises, a few out loud laughs. It was just a fun movie. I recommend you check it out. It's in theaters May 13th. It's starting to release. But keep an eye on it, and it'll be coming to your town at some point. You'll be able to see it. And if you want more details on the movie, go to sundownmovie.com. Definitely check it out if you can. Love supporting independent films. And we're going to talk to the director, Fernando Labria. Basically, Fernando talks about how he got into filmmaking, why he wanted to make a teen sex comedy, you know, in Mexico. And it goes in a lot of great detail. There's some great information. He's got a great story about how his mom was on set, what it's like, you know, to have those parties after, you know, when you're shooting a party movie. What happens when the movie stops? Does the party keep going? What happens? And there's some fun little tidbits about that. It's a really interesting interview, and I hope you guys enjoy it. I'm going to stop yammering and just let you listen to Fernando Labria talk about Sundown. Hey, Fernando, how are you?
Hey, hello, Aaron. Good, are you?
I'm good. Where are you at right now?
I'm walking on Santa Monica, actually.
All right. So you're in warmth. Well, let's talk about your movie Sundown. Well, before I get into that, what made you want to get into filmmaking? It's kind of the first question I always ask everybody is what made you want to be a filmmaker, director, producer?
Since I was a kid, my father was he was not a filmmaker, but he loved movies and TV movies and everything that was telling a story or something. So my mother was a very bad partner for him because she fell asleep in the theater and all that. So my father noticed that I was really interested in films and movies, and so he took me as his right wing, like his partner. So since I was a little kid, I went to the movie theaters with him, or he was ready to see the movie of the week or whatever, and I was there, and I really liked the Westerns at that time, I remember. Mm-hmm. And that's how, how I started getting interested in filmmaking. And then, obviously, when I got a little bit older, not much, but when I had more, like, brains, I guess, the feeling of watching a good movie and getting into me, and the feeling the silver screen made for me was something I wanted to, like, do myself. So, my father introduced me to all this world, and then I kept going by myself and just watching movies and really connecting with them was the feeling. It was a feeling, but also living in Mexico, as you know, is a very difficult country in terms of mm-hmm. a lot of impunity and corruption and all that you feel bad about it and you want to do something. So I said to myself, well, I love making movies. I would love to make movies, and I would like to take a message, say things I cannot say on the street or on a strike or whatever. I think making movies will be more powerful to take the message than just going to strike in front of the presidential, like the Mexican White House or something. So that's also what attracted me to make movies. So kind of like both of that, you know?
What were the Westerns? What kind of Westerns? Did you go spaghetti Western or John Wayne?
My father was a big fan of Clint Eastwood, so he introduced me to Clint Eastwood when he was a cowboy and all the Westerns from Sergio Leone.
Mm, yeah.
you know, the bad, the good, and the ugly, and all those Westerns, those are the ones that got my attention, and I really loved Westerns. And then when he was taking me to the movies and I was a little kid, there was this movie that was like my first like superhero movie out there that I saw, which was called Flash Gordon.
Oh, man.
You remember that one?
Yeah, with Queen. Queen did the soundtrack for that. Yeah, I remember it.
Yeah, yeah, with Queen, exactly. So I was a little boy, very young boy, and I was shocked with that movie. I went to the theater to see it like 12 times. So that movie, which is completely sci-fi, out of this world, was, and the music, I'm a very music lover, you know, I every soundtrack in my movies is very well thought. So Flash Gordon make a big impact in my life when I was a kid, and the Western. So the combination of those two, I think, is what got me excited with the movies.
Man, those are two drastically different kinds of movies right there.
Yeah, I know. I like all kinds of movies. That's why my first movie was like a romantic type of Romeo and Juliet with drug dealers and surfers. Very, very like Shakespearean. Mm-hmm. And the second movie is completely a coming of age, Sundown, I mean, coming of age, comedy, crazy type of like Risky Business meets The Hangover. Very different, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because of that. Yeah, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I just don't want to get stuck with the same genre all the time. That would be boring.
Yes, it probably would be. You'd be stuck in a niche. You don't want to be in that.
Yeah, no, I don't want to be a niche director.
No. So how did you end up with Sundown? I read that this was originally a Spanish film. So tell me how it eventually became a film about two white guys from America going to Puerto Vallarta. Yeah, I can never say it right.
Puerto Vallarta.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, Puerto Vallarta. Well, everything started after making the movie I did, the Mexican movie I did, Amar Morir.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to do something different, like a comedy. And the distributors that were like supporting my work and backing me up were like, hey, will you do a comedy? I'm like, I never done one, but sure. I like the challenge. Why not? And they gave me a few scripts, which they were more like romantic comedies, more like soap opera-ish. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like them. And I said, what do you guys need, a comedy? And they told me a young audience. I'm like, okay, give me 2 months. Let me get out of here. Let me get some ideas and come back in 2 months with some ideas. And I went back and I started. One day I went with I live in LA since like 2002. I came to school here. So I was having a dinner and drinks with my old friends from Guadalajara, which is very close to Puerto Vallarta. Mm-hmm. And we were like remembering all the anecdotes we had when we were going as Mexicans to the spring break to Puerto Vallarta to take advantage of the spring break, to take advantage of the beautiful American drunken girls, you know what I mean? So,
oh, yeah. Yeah, so, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, and we were local, so you have some advantages like that. So we were remembering all that, and suddenly I looked at my watch, and it was like 6 a.m. already, just talking about those anecdotes. And I said, here is the movie, you know? Here is the movie. I want to do a movie portraying a good Mexico, a different Mexico, not the drug-dealing, corruption Mexico this time, because mm-hmm. I did that with my first movie. So Puerto Vallarta is a great place international. And everything started as two Mexican kids from Guadalajara going to take advantage of the spring break to Puerto Vallarta. But I met this writer. His name is Miguel Tejada Flores, the guy who wrote all the revenge, you know, that invented the Revenge of the Nerds, and he wrote Friday Night and other movies. He told me, hey, why don't we do it about two American kids instead of two American Mexican boys? You're going to get more territories, and the movie is going to be watched in more countries because it's going to be in English. I'm like, you're completely right. Let's do that. And also because in my first movie, there was an epidemic problem in Mexico in 2009 called the swine flu.
Mm-hmm.
And they closed all the theaters like for 3 weeks. And my movie was there, and they really, you know, cut my movie out because nobody was going to the theaters because they were closed because of this epidemic thing called the swine flu. So that was a big, like, hit for me because the movie was doing really well. But since it was in Spanish, the movie was not going to be able to be sold in other countries that much.
Mm-hmm.
So when Miguel, the co-writer, gave me that idea, I said, yeah, let's do it in English. Let's have two guys from Oregon, because he lives in Oregon, Miguel, and from a small town in Oregon, that Puerto Vallarta is going to be like Vegas for them. And that makes more sense. And it will be in English. And I live in LA and I want to keep doing like international films. So it's a great movie to start my career, to put the word out there that I exist as a director for the international world and to Hollywood and all that. So I thought it was the right project to do it and do it in English. And that's why we changed the story to two American guys.
Yeah, it works. Actually, it was a very fun movie. And you can tell Miguel, I'm a big fan of Fright Night 2, even though that's not, you know, people always talk about the first one. I really like the second movie, so you can let him know. It's a great movie.
Yeah, I will, yeah. Crazy Miguel.
For independent film, you managed a really solid cast. You've got Terry Hatcher, John Michael Higgins, Camilla Bell. You've got Jordy, Devin, Sean. How'd you get this cast?
We started with castings, of course, here in L.A. We had a really good casting directors. Kelly McGee and Annie McCarthy,
mm-hmm.
and they did a great job bringing actors to, like, for example, in casting, we got Devon and Sean and Sarah Paxton as well. And then with the relationships they had in the agencies, in the talent agencies, and also the relationships from one of the producers, Willie Kotner, between those, we were lucky enough to get the script to good agents, and they spread the word. Like, for example, Sarah Paxton is from UTA, Camilla Bell is from UTA, and we had access to that talent agency because of that. So we said, hey, we're looking for the mom and the dad, what do you have? And they read the script again, and they came up with Terry Hatcher. And Terry Hatcher, I was like in shock. I was like, really? She wants to make a movie like this? and apparently, yes, because she was coming out from TV and she wanted to do like independent, fun movie. And she was the one that recommended John Michael Higgins. She was the one that told us, hey, I would love to work with John Michael Higgins. Were you willing to talk to him and see if he can be the father? I'm like, of course, John Michael Higgins is a great actor, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to talk to him. If he wants to do the movie, I'm up for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we got John Michael Higgins and Terry Hatcher. And then, well, the Mexican actors, which is solid in Mexico, they're solid actors. They're mostly relationships, people I worked with before and people I wanted to work. And I knew them, and they were right for the part. So that's how we got them. And Jordi Moya, he's represented also by a Mexican manager as well. So through that Mexican manager that I know really well, we got to Jordi, and we had a Skype call. He was in Spain, and we connected really well together, and we make it happen. And he wanted to do like a different villain, you know. He wanted to do something funny, something mm-hmm. not as serious as he has done before. So he connected with that, and actually he was the one to recommend doing the character Russian, you know, because Ukrainian, sorry. And because he created this character called Igor Kaganovich, that he created the character for Guy Ritchie for a movie. I don't know what movie, mm-hmm. but Guy Ritchie didn't take Jordi as the Ukrainian. Actually, he casted a real Ukrainian. So Jordi kept this character in his head, and when he read the script, he thought it was perfect to be Dorian, Igor Kaganovich, in the movie. And I said, sure, I like the idea. Bring Igor Kaganovich down to Mexico and let's shoot it. And that's how it happened. So mostly that, and also the DJs. I was lucky enough, when we were writing the script, me and Miguel were researching a lot in Puerto Vallarta. And we went to the spring break in Puerto Vallarta just to get the feeling again and to refresh my memory. And lucky enough, all that month in Puerto Vallarta, all these major DJs were playing in different clubs. And I have access to all those clubs and access to all the DJs. And I just went with them and talked to them about the movie. And Steve Aoki and Paul Oakenfold showed interest. So my music supervisor here in the States started talking to them and to their agencies. And we brought them on board, And not just that, Ultra Music, Ultra Records, which is the record company of that represent all these DJs, said like, yes, we want to be part of the movie. We want to do the soundtrack. Will you be interested in having us doing the soundtrack? I'm like, of course I'm interested. And then Chris Lake and Adrian Lux and other DJs came into the movie. So luck, you know, I was lucky. I think they connected with the script. They like it. They like the craziness. They like the exotic location of Puerto Vallarta, and everything happened. I don't know. I was lucky.
Yeah, the soundtrack's great too, by the way. It's great.
Yeah, I'm very proud of the soundtrack. I think it's awesome. Awesome soundtrack.
Whenever I see these party films, I kind of always have to ask, how much partying does the cast and crew actually do? Because, I mean, you basically have your own paid-for rave.
You mean during the shooting or when are in Puerto Vallarta and they're in the day off?
No, you're doing a shooting and you basically got a fully funded rave and the shooting's over. Do you guys just keep a party going or do you just go back to your rooms?
You know, the scenes with the actors, it was a combination. It was a combination. It's like the scenes with the actors, when they talk, the music cannot be playing in the background. So all that was real extras, and the DJs were there. And the way I do it, I turn on the music so everybody gets into the groove, and suddenly I shut it off and the people are still dancing and still pretending there's music so the actors can be talking and screaming. So that's how we did the talking scenes. But then the DJs, the deal with them was to come to shoot during one day, full day, let's say from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., and then at night, at 12, we will open the club for the public, sell tickets, and they will give a concert for everyone to enjoy. And what I did was I brought the cameras to shoot the concert as well. And I kept the main extras in front, in the front row. And I brought the actors as well. And the DJs were wearing the same clothing they were wearing when we were shooting the scene.
Oh.
So I brought two or three cameras just to shoot the concerts, the real concerts, and I combine that with the scenes, you know, so that's how it feels alive. But after that, everyone went home and to sleep, and no more party.
No more party. What's the most challenging part of filming this? I mean, is it the location? Is it, what was the hardest part?
I think the location was challenging because many reasons. One, we were shooting like in the beginning of the summer. So the weather was brutal, was very, very, very warm and very humid. And there, it's a tropical jungle over there. So the rainy season started earlier, and that was a problematic sometimes. We were like, okay, next day we're doing all these exteriors, and next day was pouring raining. So we had to improvise a cover set or something to keep shooting and don't lose the whole day. So that was challenging. And also it was challenging, always challenging to put together like a local crew with American or people from around the world. Maybe the language barrier sometimes is challenging as well.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly that, I think. And also being in a paradise with all these beautiful beaches, all these beautiful strip joints, all these beautiful clubs and all that is very, you know, difficult not to want to go out every night. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah.
So that was not challenging for me, but for some crew members it was very challenging. Actually, some end up in jail. Some we have to kick them out of the production and send them back to Mexico because they were like, couldn't deal with that. They were like going out every night and coming to the set still drunk or hangover, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so having a little too much fun.
That was a little challenging.
One thing that really struck me, you know, I've seen a lot of these teen sex comedies and whatnot, and they almost always have kids smoking weed, doing drugs every 5 minutes, and your movie didn't really have that. Was that intentional?
Yeah, that was intentional because of, like you say, every movie like this one has that. So we didn't want to have that. And also, since we were shooting in Mexico, I didn't want to portray any drug dealing or any narcos involved or any like the normal drugs like marijuana or cocaine or ecstasy or something like that into the movie. Because like I said, I wanted to portray a fun good Mexico that really exists, mm-hmm. and don't go back to the what we see in the news every day and every time, that Mexico is dangerous. Mexico has drug dealers everywhere, and there's drugs everywhere and all that. And it's true in a sense, but not completely true. There's also the Mexico I portrayed with the movie. That Mexico exists, and I wanted to show that in the movie. That's why I didn't put that plus. Like you said, I seen that in so many teenage movies, all the drugs and all that, and we didn't want to have that this time.
Well, I appreciated it, because honestly, when you see it in every movie, it kind of becomes that thing where you just go, oh, this again? You know, we've done this 100 times, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, we wanted to treat this one as an adventure without mm-hmm. drugs, you know, like an adventure of two guys, two fish out of water, being to a foreign country for the first time in their lives, and just get in trouble. And most of the trouble they get into happened to me, or happened to a friend of mine, or happened to someone I met, or someone when we were researching the spring break in Puerto Vallarta. So one of the rules of the movie is to keep it real, the comedy, because if you see, it's not like comedy, it's more like situational comedy. What happens to them is what you laugh about, you know, mm-hmm. like waking up next to a transvestite is something that happened to a few friends of mine, you know what I mean? And we try to keep it real, keep all the comedy real. And that was the idea and the concept of the movie.
Wait, so waking up with the transvestites based on a real story? That's disturbing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I have a few friends that happened to them. And, well, in Mexico, and if you go to Thailand, be careful with the ladyboys.
That's funny.
Yeah.
I've got to let you go here in a second, but I got to ask you, I was reading the notes, the press notes, and it mentioned that your family also worked on the film, but that your mom was on set every day. I mean, how do you do a movie like this with your mom there?
That's a good question. Well, you know, my mom is a great person, very young, at least in heart and in the way she thinks. You know, I'm the older in my house. I'm the first son, mm-hmm. so she's very proud of what I accomplished. You know, because coming from a town like Guadalajara, and now being in LA and trying to make it in Hollywood, and now making movies, that's like nothing she thought nobody close to her family will do. So she feels pretty very proud, and she wants to be there. She doesn't want to miss a second. You know, it's like, we were doing night shoots many times, like in the movie. Mm-hmm. And I said to her, hey, don't come, you know, just stay home, stay sleeping. And she said, no, I'm going to be there next to you. And actually she came to pre-production as well. And she was telling me, okay, what do I do? What do I work for? I'm like, okay, this week, go with the location scouters, with the location managers. And she was going with them. And then next week, okay, this week you're going to with the art department. And she was with the art department and all that. And in the movie, she became my personal assistant, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's great.
She said, like, okay, what do I need to do? I'm like, you just need to make sure I don't get sick, that I'm well-fed, and I'm strong to finish this movie, because it's going to be very challenging because of the weather and all that. Mm-hmm. So it was funny, because I was in the middle of the shoot, and suddenly the guy from Craft Service was coming to me with like a banana and a like power bar. I'm like, hey, what are you doing? And he said, no, you have to eat it. I'm like, why? Because your mom told me to. And I look around, you know, to the other side of the set, and my mom was like just telling me with her face, like, eat it, you know what I mean? So it was very funny. It was a good experience. And she was my partner. She was my right wing. She was the one that when I felt tired or what I felt, you know, depressed or something that didn't work that day, she was the one there to keep, you know, put my hopes up and get me going. So she's been an important person in my life, and making movies. She's been in every movie I made. So, and she's going to keep going to be in every movie. She went to every premiere. Actually, we were in the premiere in Mexico City, and Steve Aoki was there, and my mom came to him, hey, I'm like, hey, you're Steve Aoki, right? Yes, I'm Steve Aoki. well, I want a picture with you now. And she was like, who's this lady? And you know, she was very, my mom was very fond and good with him. But then he find out that the mom, that it was the mom of the director of the movie. Mm-hmm. And he was cracking up. He was taking pictures with my mom every 10 minutes. You know what I mean? It was funny.
That's really
sweet.
Yeah,
my mom is like an angel.
That's a great story. It really is a great story. I got to let you go. But before you go, is there anything, what's next? What are you doing next?
Well, next I'm in talks to do a movie here in the States. Funny enough as well, is similar in terms of, it's going to be a teenage kind of drama with some comedy involved, mm-hmm. kind of like John Hughes type of movie, you know?
Really?
Those type of movie, like Pretty in Pink or something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in talks with these producers, and I think the movie is going to be for Netflix. So that, which is great because this movie Sundown got their attention, and that's why they called me, and that was the whole purpose of doing Sundown as well. And that will be my first directorial gig because I'm always involved in the writing and in the producing. So this time will be just directing, which I feel lucky and I need it. And then I'm putting together another drama. It's called Riding to the Light.
Okay.
And that's a road trip drama, three people going through Mexico, American and Mexican actors, some surfing involved, some heavy drugs involved as well. So it's people in a very dark place in the beginning of the movie, and at the end they're able to find the light and come out and have a better life. But that's what I'm working on right now.
That's great. I'm really looking forward to it. Seriously, and I know I got to let you go, but I want to wish you all the best with the movie. It's a fun movie, and I hope people will check it out for sure.
Well, thank you. Thank you for saying that. Thank you for the interview. I really appreciate it. And hope to talk to you soon again with another movie.
Absolutely. Let us know about the next Netflix one, or the Writing for the Light, either one. Thanks.
Sounds
for
great, Aaron.
Thank you. Take care.
Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day. Bye.
There you go, guys. That was my interview with Fernando Labria. I hope you enjoyed it. If you're interested in the movie, go to sundownmovie.com. That's sundownmovie.com, and definitely find it. It starts releasing in theaters May 13th, 2016. And if I didn't mention it before, it stars Terry Hatcher in the movie, Camilla Bell, Sarah Paxton, Devin Werkheiser, John Michael Higgins. You heard most of these names come out. It's a fun movie. Definitely check it out. I highly recommend it. That's going to do it for this episode. So once again, thank you for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. We do try to bring in these interviews with filmmakers in the world of independent cinema when we can. So I really hope you enjoyed this one. Remember to subscribe and review us on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, whatever podcast app you currently use. Our normal show has a new episode every week and is also available at thehollywoodoutsider.com. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater to see Sundown, buy popcorn.